So since when did non-college educated white Americans living in gutted communities that have been suffering for years and who missed out on the tepid recovery of the Obama years, since when did they become invisible to college educated political strategists of both parties? How do you miss 48% of the electorate? Donald Trump spoke to an America that has been frustrated and angry for a long time, but in this election showed itself to represent an electoral majority. In many ways, the joy and excitement that Barack Obama inspired among African Americans and liberals weary of George W. Bush and war in 2008 was matched or exceeded by the anger and fighting spirit of a middle class that sees Donald Trump as some kind of economic messiah for now. Alexander Zaychuk spent much of the past year speaking with Trump supporters in different parts of the USA. He's the author of The Gilded Rage, A Wild Ride Through Donald Trump's America, and he joins me now. Alex, there are a lot of happy people out there, and you know who they are.
I was at a rally in southwestern Pennsylvania on Sunday night, and I was shocked by the sort of celebratory tone. You got the sense almost that they knew something everybody else didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a feeling I had over the course of reporting this book during the primary as well.
And the they is a white, largely not college educated, middle class population that essentially consists of rural America from coast to coast.
Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty good description. It was non-college educated whites that put Trump over the top. Those were where he saw his biggest gains. Although, of course, there were also middle class and even upper middle class supporters and people that voted for him, which is how you got this average income of $72,000 that was often thrown around in the media as some kind of proof that this wasn't really a lower class or working class phenomenon. And therefore, it was just really about race. It wasn't economic anxiety.
And again, none of this is, you know, hidden in some vault. I mean, you were able to see this in almost every community that you visited, which raises a question. So how does a bunch of college-educated Democrat liberals miss, you know, half of America that's bleeding out of the aorta?
That's a great question, but I don't think it's a very hard one. I think a lot of people who were pontificating on the average Trump supporter, quote-unquote, didn't get out of that bubble very much. They tended to be Acela corridor types. And, you know, obviously the National Press Corps got out and they did a lot of meet the Trump voter type profiles. But these often were very superficial. I think overall there could have been a lot more attempts to actually understand what was happening in these places. And generally speaking, the pundits, the political class, they don't live there. And it was in their interest to present a superficial reading of it as just racism, because then it lets everybody off the hook and everyone can sort of go into this dismissive gladiatorial pose.
Think in your mind of the ugliest, most deindustrialized community that you visited. And there's probably a number of them that you could, but just give me a name of one.
Well, West Allis, Wisconsin.
West Allis, Wisconsin. Okay. So how long of a clock do you think the West Allis, Wisconsin voters are going to give this president-elect Donald Trump to do something that's going to bring money, jobs, a factory back to their community? Or are they going to be patient with him? I don't understand how quickly they need to be redressed before they move on.
They would say, as long as it seems that he has the forgotten man and the forgotten woman, as he put it in his speech, at the forefront of his policies and attention, then they'd probably give him a certain amount of time. However, I think that they have reason to be worried if they've been paying attention. I mean, Donald Trump has surrounded himself by Goldman Sachs alums and sort of small government, traditional fiscally conservative, let's say, Republican types, and his economic populist rhetoric. We'll find out when he starts making appointments how serious he is about that stuff. I mean, he never really presented much of a serious plan for bringing back some kind of golden age of American industry. I mean, the golden age of American industry was one of labor power, and he offered a sort of top-down, very paternalistic, you know, model of, I'm just going to call up the CEO of Carrier Air Conditioners and yell
and get
at
that
him.
Factory back here.
Yeah, that's not how it works.
Right. So then the question becomes, if they don't get what they want right away and they continue to be angry The only short-term thing that Donald Trump can do is cause pain to people that these folks believe have benefited while they've suffered. And that could be racist. I mean, if Donald Trump says, all right, we're turning the screws on X, Y, and Z community that's receiving all this welfare, you know, that could bide him some time with the folks in West Dallas.
Right. I mean,
and that could really divide America.
And that's the danger, and that's why his sort of brand of populism is toxic, dangerous, and ultimately fake, because it's a cross racial bringing of people together that's really going to lift all boats, and we've seen that in our history at different moments, different populist moments in our past. And I think what's going to have to happen is the Democrats are going to have to come out of this very different, and that will happen. I mean, I think one of the things that happened last night is that the neoliberal Clintonite Democratic Party died and it's not coming back. So the question is, how do we build a new Democratic Party that can appeal to – I don't think we're ever going to talk to all of the Trump supporters, but I do think there's a significant chunk that can be brought in to a much more kind of American, inclusive, pro-science populist politics. And I met a lot of them in the primary states. A lot of people gave Bernie Sanders a very close listen.
Alexander Zaychuk is author of The Gilded Rage, A Wild Ride Through Donald Trump's America. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.